setting could be like this, or like this. Just like his Citroen C3. Citroen C3 is available in 36 colour combinations. We could have made a car, but we made a car for you. Citroen C3 is now available with 0% APR. Visit citroen.co.uk to find out more. Citroen UK is a credit broker and not a lender. Terms, eligibility, criteria and returns conditions apply. PSA Finance UK Limited. 0% offer is only available on selected versions. Visit citroen.co.uk for more details. Citroen.
The following is a presentation of the High Spot Podcast.
The following contest scheduled for one fall.
If I can be serious for a minute, without being interrupted.
Excuse me!
What? What?
The measuring stick just changed around here, buddy. You're looking at it.
We don't just set the bar. We are the bar.
Making their way to the ring. Talking about the world of professional wrestling. The team of Jeff Martin and the trendsetter, Brian Perga. The Jersey Wrecking Crew.
Do I have everybody's attention now? You're listening to the High Spot Podcast. We are the Jersey Wrecking Crew. I am Jeff Martin alongside the trendsetter, Brian Berga. You can listen to us on the Cheap Pops Podcast Network, on Blog Talk Radio. Trendsetter, an amazing weekend of professional wrestling. What a great Memorial Day weekend it was. How you doing, man? Are you burnt out?
I am trying to recuperate. It is really difficult when you deal with all the exciting stuff that you and I were a part of this weekend. You know, not only was Memorial Day a chance to pay homage and to pay respects to all the veterans out there, and we thank you so much for your service, but it was also a great time to spend time with the family. It was also a great time to enjoy something that you and I have enjoyed ever since we grew up, and then watching it on TV, especially those TVs you had to turn with the knob, guys. Those really did exist. You had to turn them with the knob. There's no more control. There's no smart TVs. Those little flippy antennas, professional wrestling in its purest form in terms of being a fan. And it's kind of a shame that only the people that are in Ridgefield Park, New Jersey for Battle Club Pro for Innovative Pro Wrestling, its debut show, one in the chamber in the same area as well, only got a chance to see the great content, the great competition, which is professional wrestling. But yeah, I'm definitely excited. I'm excited for the crew to listen to this episode, as they always do, of the High Spot Podcast every Friday, where you guys can also follow us on Twitter, Instagram, Snapchat, like us on Facebook at High Spot Podcast. Make sure you follow our website, highspotpodcast.com. And Jeff, they can also listen to this episode on SoundCloud, TuneIn, Google Play, Stitcher, and Podbean. Make sure you subscribe to Apple Podcasts and iTunes. Leave a 5-star rating review. It only takes a couple seconds. We're just all over the place, Jeff, talking about what we love.
We got a great show for you today. George Carroll, international wrestling executive, and we'll have a wrestling seminar for Capital Wrestling this Saturday. Will join us. Really excited to have him. This is like a long time in the making for this interview with George Carroll, and he joins the High Spot Podcast as well. And also, make sure you subscribe to the High Spot Podcast YouTube channel, because yes, we did a Battle Club Pro and Innovative Pro Wrestling review, and all the interviews from there with Maria Matic, with Kara Hogan, with JT Dunn and Rich Swann are on that channel. So make sure you watch that as well. Like
and
subscribe.
The beautiful Mia Yim, Jeff. We can't let her out.
Oh, we can. I mean, I saved the best for last. Mia Yim rejoined us on the High Spot Podcast. You don't want to miss that. So again, like and subscribe and watch some great wrestling interviews with the Jersey Wrecking Crew as well. But again, like I said, George Carroll will join us on this week's episode. Trendsetter, where do we begin? Let's begin with the weekend and just a brief synopsis. Battle Club Pro and Innovative Pro Wrestling knocked it out of the ballpark. An all-women show. A lot of people were wondering, could this be possible? Could it be done in Ridgefield Park, New Jersey? And the answer is absolutely yes. Congratulations to Jordan Grace, the Icons champion, the first ever one crowned, and also to the match of the night, no doubt about it, in question. Maybe the best match in Battle Club Pro history is Mia Yim and Tessa Blanchard. They tore the house down, and it was great to be there live. And then Innovative Pro, also knocked out of the ballpark, was seeing JT Dunn and Shane Strickland. And, of course, a couple surprises here and there. And, of course, we got to see Rich Swann in action as well, and he was able to talk to us as well on the High Spot podcast. So, man, what a weekend it was, Trendsetter. Just a brief synopsis, what do you think?
What I think is the fact that when you have stuff like this, it's very hard for it to ever live up to the billing. There's always pressure. There's always, for example, things just don't work themselves out because it's beyond our control. Certain things just don't happen, especially when there have been hiccups where certain individuals can't compete due to injury. We saw a little bit of that at Innovative Pro, and people just kind of fill in and step up, next man, next woman up. And I think ultimately, in terms of expectations, it could be very easy. You know, you had a lot of things going against you in terms of the fact that there's a Saturday show and then a Sunday matinee. But you know what? The crowd lived up to it. They believed the hype. They believed the billing. They were definitely into it in both shows. And it just kind of showcases the fact, too, that, you know, something you and I are talking about. We're talking about the events of Jeff of All In. Looking forward to that being in Chicago. And, you know, especially when we're going to have George on the show, too, talking about independent wrestling. To me, it's the strongest I've ever seen it. You know, I remember kind of briefly looking around it and seeing that, you know, there was something missing. It seems like the enthusiasm, not only from the fans, but from the talent's perspective, is definitely there. So honestly, it lived to the hype, lived up to the billing, and basically knocked a home run, like you said. There are no other words I can say, but basically, job well done.
Yeah, and of course, if you want more on the weekend that was on Memorial Day weekend for Innovative Pro Wrestling and Battle Cup Pro, simply just go to our recap show. We've got, again, exclusive interviews with Rich Swann, with JT Dunn, with Mia Yim, with Kara Hogan, with Maria Manic, and a special audio message from Teddy Hart to the fans at Richfield Park, New Jersey, which, you know, we definitely have to get in there because, again, Teddy Hart is definitely one of the best wrestlers we've seen in person, too, and just a genuine good guy. Yes, he's had some trials and tribulations along the way, but you know what? He still does what he loves, and he entertains the crowd like no other. So you can also hear from Teddy Hart on the High Spot Podcast recap show for Innovative Pro Wrestling and Battle Club Pro. Great job, guys. Really couldn't have done a better job. You guys always do it for the fans. But Trendsetter, something also too that happened this past weekend was also finding out of Ring of Honor United in London, England, and then having finally Nick Aldis accept Cody Rhodes' challenge. You know, officially he is all in, but there's a stipulation where if Cody successfully wins that Ring of Honor championship at Best in the World on June 29th in a triple threat against the champ Dalton Castle and Marty Scurll, a Bullet Club member, he will have to put that title on the line. It'll be title for title, the Ring of Honor World Championship against the NWA. That 10 pounds of gold just makes it more all in for that amazing Labor Day weekend. Nick Aldis, Cody, official.
It's official. Yeah. They are both all in, Jeff. And it's like you could have drawn this up maybe 5 years ago, even 3 years ago, and said, you know, this would have happened and you've had the opportunity where the NWA Championship will be revitalized, brought back to prestige is what they're trying to do now. I think they're doing a very good job about it. And the Ring of Honor champion will go one-on-one, title versus title. You know, kind of like with this weekend, Jeff, there are a lot of firsts. And this is the first time this has ever happened. You couldn't ask for a better moment. You couldn't ask for a better momentum for both, you know, the NWA and Ring of Honor and what they're leaning towards in terms of what they're going to try to accomplish in Chicago, Illinois for All In. I'm smiling from ear to ear right now. It's hard for me to keep my composure because I'm excited.
And you don't really smile. You never really smile.
No, because I am grotesque and ugly when I smile, so that's why I don't do it. But the mere fact I'm always somebody who keeps my emotions in check, and it's getting really difficult now because the anticipation is definitely growing more and more. And what could you ask for more than a wrestling fan to see something like this? Things you never thought would ever happen. And it brings up a great point that you brought up to me, Jeff, when we saw it actually happen and we saw the video of Cody and Nick finally shaking hands and accepting this challenge. Is the mere mention that all these promotions are helping each other out. And that's what you really need to do in order for this whole thing that we love so much as professional wrestling to be successful. Help everyone out. It's not necessary in terms of trying to take out your competition. Help out your competition because in the end, both promotions and ultimately the fans and the talent win.
There is no question to what you just said. Everyone wins here. And you can go so many ways with you know, who goes over? Does Cody go over in his own show? Does the NWA Championship need to get over by being put on Cody Rhodes' waist? Does this add? How does this help out Ring of Honor? Well, it helps out Ring of Honor because their title is going to be headlined in an all-in event where it's going to have all eyes on the world, whether it's televised or not. People want to know what the outcome will be between Nick Aldis and Cody, the American Nightmare. So I think it helps them out. But to me, that 10 pounds of gold, which has, listen, let's be honest, that thing was a mere afterthought just a few years ago, okay? No one cared about that title. And this is a title that's been worn by the Dory Funks, by the Briscoes, by Ric Flair, by Dusty Rhodes, by everybody, okay? And the fact that it was, you know, maybe it was on life support, this title, and the fact that, you know, Billy Corgan and the likes of Dave Lagana and everyone that works for the NWA, that they're able to now think about this. This is going to be the talk all summer, the NWA Championship. You know, no disrespect for the Ring of Honor Championship as well, but, you know, that title has a lot of history, and for them to be able to make it a focal point of an event like this, it can only mean better things for this NWA Championship and just, you know, wrestling in general, because, like you said, it's all about helping each other out. And talk about the history that if Cody were to win that championship, just what it would mean to the, you know, Rhodes legacy, for him to be an NWA champion just like his dad.
Well, what I had answered to your question there is I don't really feel that everything that Cody has been doing and accomplishing to this point, Jeff, has anything to do with his family's legacy. I mean, Cody is definitely set to make his own legacy. Granted, yes, he has the Rhodes name. He has the bleached blonde hair now. He obviously showing homage to his father and his family legacy. But I feel Cody right now is destined and determined. From the moment he left WWE and bet on himself, is without a shadow of a doubt one of the biggest stars, if not the biggest stars, on the quote-unquote independent scene, because he is making his own legacy, which, you know, ultimately, and to me, honestly, it's not a question if, it's only a question to me, Jeff, of when he does return back to WWE, maybe when he wants to finally hang up his boots and do it on that platform again. He's going to be so much more valuable and in such a higher stage, so that when he does decide to step away and finally decide, I don't want to wrestle anymore, he's going to be probably one of the biggest names out there that we'll mention with 10, 15 years down the road once he's done wrestling.
Yeah, see, here's another thing we're going to argue, and I don't want to get to that because that's another discussion, but I don't believe he will go back to WWE.
Okay, well, that's a fair assessment if you want to make that, but I think ultimately he will.
Yeah, and that again, that could be another topic, but again, though.
But would you agree on this point that he's now currently, despite the fact whether he wins the NWA World Heavyweight Championship, he has made himself into a global superstar?
Oh, definitely has, but I don't
his
see...
His stock is so high.
But now, I don't see how you don't think this intertwines with him becoming the NWA champion just like his dad. Because as long as he's Cody, as long as he's the son of Dusty Rhodes, then this title is always going to be associated with him, and him winning it will be a great achievement that, you know what, he did it, and so did his dad. So I don't think that you can, you know, not say that that is important, because I think that's what makes is hyping up this all-in match.
I'm not the one saying it. Cody said it himself. So if you're going to disagree with anybody, you're disagreeing with Cody, because he said he's not doing this for his father's legacy. He said he's doing this for him. So take it for it what you will. You know, Cody said it himself. If you want to disargue with him, I would say, please, Jeff, don't do it. We want to be a part of All In. Please, we don't want Flip Gordon to take our spot, okay? So just be quiet, all right? Just bite the tongue now until Chicago.
Yeah, no,
we don't need Flip taking our spot. Sorry, Flip, we love you, but you know, Jeff and I badly want to go to this event.
Yeah, I mean, as much again as he's saying that, I believe down deep in his heart, though, that it would mean the world to Cody to become the NWA champion at an event that he is not only maybe booking, but also, you know, co-funding, and just like his dad did, and the sheer genius that was Dusty Rhodes, for Cody to walk away with the NWA championship. Don't think it doesn't mean anything to Cody, because I think it does. Anyways, Trendsetter, without further ado, we've got George Carroll with us, and we are talking New Japan Pro Wrestling. We're talking about independent pro wrestling, and of course, this international wrestling executive has an amazing mind for just the business, and we had a chance to talk to him, and lots of interesting things, just like the future of New Japan Pro Wrestling, and also just what it takes, you know, to do a seminar, and what he's thinking of, what message he wants to spread to them, because he will be at Capital Wrestling this Saturday for his first seminar from 3 to 6 p.m., 301 Garden Street, Hoboken, New Jersey. Tickets are only $30. It is a steal. But now, without further ado, and a long time coming, here is George Carroll on the High Spot Podcast. All right, Trendsetter, the interviews just keep getting better and better here on the High Spot Podcast. And joining us now is George Carroll. He is the International Wrestling Executive, and he joins us on the High Spot Podcast. George, what's going on, man? How you doing today?
I'm good, Jeff. It's been a long time coming. I appreciate your patience and persistence.
I appreciate
My schedule is very tough, and we've tried to connect 100 times, and I'm glad we finally got this thing together today.
Sometimes for Jeff, it's persistence. I consider it annoyance. So
no, I'm not annoying. I let George be, but really wanted to talk to you because first and foremost, you are probably the definition in my eyes when I've done research on you about what the definition of hustle and working hard is, because to get to the point where you are right now, you definitely have to do all those things, and definitely are a kind of motivation for Brian and myself to get where we want to be. So I just want to first and foremost thank you, George, because reading your bio and all the stuff on you, it's very inspirational.
I appreciate that. I mean, I'm humbled. I don't know what to say. It's just all I've known. And once, you know, you get a taste of something you really want, literally the only thing that's going to stop you is you. So whatever part I've played in you guys motivating yourselves, I'm totally honored.
All right, and of course, you will be having your first wrestling seminar this Saturday, June 2nd, from 3 to 6 p.m. in Hoboken, New Jersey, 301 Garden Street, for Capital Wrestling. And just talk about that. You know, what is it? What's the main goal and objective that you want to give any wrestler, any personality that is attending this seminar?
So first, it must be informative. It must have a lot to take away. I don't want it to be like a standard seminar where you come and I just talk and it's all about me and what I've done. And it's, you know, it's like a career tutorial. It's going to be more interactive. I want it to be something that it doesn't end that day. There's going to be portions where, and this is the first time I've even said this to anybody, where there are going to be, you know, the ability for people to follow up outside of this, you know, as you know, from no matter where they're coming from, you know, if you can get me links and stuff like that, I definitely, for the people who are interested and they really want to take this further than where they are, I want this to be something that it doesn't just stop on June 2nd. Oh, hey, George, see you later. Thanks. I want it to be something that can carry with. I want them to know, like, hey, George said this sparked something, and they can reach back out to me and I can, you know, help them through hurdles or be there to just pat them on the back and say, hey, great job. You applied information, or you believe in yourself, and, you know, a combination of both of those things helped elevate your game and now you're next level. I've found a path where I have been with people before they were, you know, even regional names, where they're just starting out all the way up now, you know, through main rosters on national television, international television. So I want it to be real, something that these people can really look at me and go, you know what, I don't really know much of George other than what I've read and, you know, who he's associated with at different times. I want them to get to know me, you know, personally and up close, see what I can offer and how they can apply that to themselves and better themselves, because this business has always been built on sharing knowledge and not letting it die. And I've been lucky enough to be around some amazing people, even, you know, today, that willingly share information with me and push me to be better. And I just want that for everybody else, especially those that are coming to the seminar.
Now, George, when it comes to the seminar, there's always the ability of sharing. Like you said, this business is based on sharing information. Is there any pressure, or maybe sometimes for me, I'd be scratching my head in terms of what type of information you plan on sharing with these people?
No, because that's where I think I want to make it more personal. It's going to be about finding out the if I pull back a little bit, anybody that I've ever worked with, it's always about what your short-term goals are, what your long-term goals are. If you don't know that, it's hard for anybody to really help you. If you're just flying by the seat of your pants, it's going to be very tough for even the most skilled people to guide you to where you want to be. But if you know that, short-term, long-term, medium goals, then it's going to be, you know, a lot easier. And that's where I think my knowledge comes into play, because if your goals aren't to be necessarily at the top of an international or, you know, a mega promotion, and you just want to be the top guy in your region because that's what your career goals are, I can help you do that. I firmly believe that there are ways that I know of that will help you achieve those goals. So there's no real pressure on me. I'm not worried about not being able to help somebody, because, you know, as long as you know what you want to do, I can help you get there, I believe.
George, what do you think is one of the mistakes that maybe a wrestler that's getting into this business makes that you see kind of everywhere? Because, again, you've been everywhere. You've seen almost everything. What do you think is one of the first mistakes that, man, can be really correctable that some wrestlers make that you really want to emphasize in the seminar?
Originality. A lot of people coming into wrestling have this vision, or maybe fall into the trap of becoming like everybody else. And, you know, William Regal one time sat me down whenever I was watching a match with him. And there were six guys in the match. And I just asked him, if you were in this match, what would you do? He said, I would look at the other five people in this match, and I would do the exact opposite of all five of them, because they were pretty much all six doing the same exact thing. And I think that's the big, I think guys are afraid to step outside the box and be themselves. I think they become what they think people want to see and what they, you know, they believe is going to get them to the next level, because they see that wrestler X has gotten so far and he's such a big deal that I have to copy what he's doing. And you really don't have to. You really don't have to. So, you know, you have to become yourself. You really have to go outside the box and create your own personality, create your own moveset, create a different attachment than somebody else's to that form.
I mean, totally agree. Originality right now is something that I believe once you get that, once you set your own look and your own uniqueness, I think that's a huge step in you becoming, you standing out, right? That's basically what you want to do. You want to stand out, be different from the others. But again, this seminar is, you know, this Saturday from 3 to 6 p.m. For Capital Wrestling in Hoboken, New Jersey. $30, trendsetter, I believe, is a steal to get the knowledge from George Carroll. And we're going to get more delve into why it's such a steal. And so basically what I want to talk about now is the evolution of international wrestling and the evolution of independent wrestling too. And just seems to be a surge in wrestling. I don't want to say just independent wrestling, but pro wrestling. And just talk about that, whether it's, you know, maybe more access to it, or it's maybe just, you know, just maybe something that, you know, a bigger brand like WWE isn't giving the fan. What do you think has led to the, you know, surgence of professional wrestling?
I think it's the rise of a new audience. I think that's a big thing. I think wrestling is almost a generational product, it feels at times. You notice it was huge in the 80s. It started to rise back in the late 90s, big into the 2000s. I think now we're seeing the, you know, the rise of the comic book generation. You notice that all the you know, the big comic book movies that are out. Star Wars has another rise in popularity. I don't want to say it's a trend or anything like that, because I believe it's bigger than that. But I think the rise in professional wrestling is the thirst for something different, but not completely different. I think if you look at New Japan Pro Wrestling versus WWE is giving you great wrestling week after week. You're seeing the biggest stars putting on better matches versus any other generation of, you know, matches they've ever had. And New Japan, they feel that pressure, like, okay, well, we have the stars to compete, you know, in high quality matchups and such. But I feel that New Japan has started to not Americanize, but almost take pro wrestling, their style of pro wrestling, and make it adaptable to a more entertainment level, while not working against their own, you know, fundamentals of what brought them to the dance, of why they're different, their own style. And I believe that's what has happened. I mean, if you look into England, Europe as a whole, Progress Wrestling and ICW and OTT, they all rose, you know, their rise was, you know, 3-4 years in the making. It's not like they just became hot a year ago. They've actually been working very hard to get up there. I just think it's that new generation of fans. They wanted something different. And at the same time that the rise of New Japan and all these international products started, WWE started noticing that the world was a lot bigger. The access for them to get to fans in Europe and, you know, South America and pretty much anywhere in the world became a little bit easier. And they also noticed, hey, that, well, those markets love the style that they're getting now, be it Japan or Europe or wherever. And they, their own product updated that way. And so I think it's, I don't want to say it's a universal product, but it sort of feels like there's almost a general same flavor to everything, or at least a relatable element in every product or style to, you know, pretty much what fans want. And I think it's great. I think that's why we're at the point. And I think it's only going to get bigger. The world is a very big place. And, you know, whether it's New Japan or it's Progress or it's WWE, in 5 years, we're going to be looking at this like, holy crap, look at how small things were then and how big they are now, you know?
Well, I think when you look at the aspect of things evolving, changing within the span of 5 years, like you mentioned, how Jeff mentioned before, there's so many places to distribute content where you can see it now. It seems like, you know, I make the relation to Baskin Robbins. You have throw in flavors. You have more options now to choose from, as opposed in the past where you didn't recognize certain promotions, but now you have the ability of recognizing them and actually seeing their content and knowing their stars. With that being said, you know, it's been really well documented. A lot of people have been saying that WWE is the juggernaut. It's the machine. It's whatever you want to call it. It's been around now. It's globalized itself so well that there's not really a second or anybody to compete with them. Do you think in the sense of within the span of 5 or maybe 10 years, we'll see promotions like New Japan, Ring of Honor, not necessarily bid for a number two or even Impact Wrestling bid for number two, but actually go head to head with a company like WWE?
I think that ship has sailed. I don't think there's any real competition to what WWE has done. You know, initially when New Japan started to come over here, I did an interview and I said, it's not so much about competing with WWE, because you really can't. They are literally, you know, the brand. When you think of pro wrestling, pretty much in the world, you automatically, people will say, oh, hey, WWE, that's style wrestling. You know, there's no way to compete with WWE. You just don't have it. They are so smart, so intelligent, so savvy. You know, as evidenced by that Fox deal, which is going to make them much bigger. It's going to be very hard for anybody to compete with them. Now, can you take a piece of their pie? Definitely. There's always going to be the desire for, you know, another element of pro wrestling. It's like any television show, like The Walking Dead, you know, has... You know, people may like The Walking Dead, and they may want a different style. So you go to iZombie, which is on Sci-Fi, there, or any other zombie style show. But you never—I don't think anybody is going to be able to physically compete with WWE on any level 5, 10, 20 years. I think what they are now is—they're Disney. They are the brand that is going to be around forever. I mean, they'll be around a lot longer than I will be.
And you mentioned the Fox deal, and it's you know, it's pretty record-breaking deal for you know, WWE and just professional wrestling, because it seems like networks want content, they want programming, and they see you know, a platform like well, a company like WWE, and they're like, well, you know, we can get this on our TV, and then we can you know, gain money through advertising. How much do you think there is a want for the networks to get pro wrestling on their shows? I know Mark Cuban has been very, you know, helpful in getting you know, New Japan and pro wrestling on the Fight app and all that. So how do you think networks want to get pro wrestling on their networks?
I think, well, if you go back in history, wrestling, you know, pretty much started at its first boom in the 40s and 50s on the Dumont Network was where, you know, it really started. They were on network television at that point. And I think they've always flirted with it. I know there was Saturday Night's Main Event. Fox had the main event a few times in the 90s. Let's see, maybe the last one was in 1992. I think the desire has always been there. I think for a very long time, wrestling was like taboo. It was like, you know, the dirty little secret. You would notice, oh, yeah, you know what? You'd find the closet wrestling fans. I think WWE itself is so acceptable now that they have pretty much washed themselves of, you know, any bad publicity that they've gone through. I mean, you can look at their whole history. They've gone through a lot. And I think they finally proved themselves to be consistent television ratings draws. If you look at, we're not talking about the height of the Attitude Era, which is, you know, record numbers and two different promotions competing with each other. And then you had ECW jumping in and you had this huge boom. No, this is one company that's doing this. This is, they've maintained themselves. Whereas, you know, a product like UFC, they've fluctuated. They've gone up and down in interest, and, you know, depending on who the top star is. I think WWE has effectively gotten the brand to be more recognizable than anybody else. It's not like there's generations with The Rock. You know, The Rock is still, people look at him as, you know, the wrestling guy. You know, he's definitely transcended that now, but you still associate him with wrestling. And when you associate him with wrestling, what do you associate him with? WWF, Hulk Hogan, same thing. You associate, they've, you know, legends like Ric Flair. This current generation doesn't look at Ric Flair and go, oh man, I remember when Flair was doing 90-minute matches with Barry Windham in the NWA. No, you have a very small audience that still remembers that. But those guys, you know, this generation all know Ric Flair from WWE. So I think they've effectively, you know, marketed the WWE brand to be the NBA, where, sure, they got LeBron James and Steph Curry and Kevin Durant in the NBA Finals, but it's still, everybody's looking for the NBA. You know, that's the reading, that's what these advertisers are paying for. And of course you want LeBron in the finals because he's the big star, but ultimately they're paying for the NBA brand. Nobody is paying LeBron James himself to be on, you know, ESPN or TNT or any of these things. They're literally paying for the brand. So, you know, it's something really special. But I think it's due to the consistency. WWE just never, they have their formula. It works. It's proven. They're pushing into different markets all across the world, and they're going there with that brand. They don't deviate from it. You know, even, you know, their other products, whether it's 205 Live or NXT, they all follow a similar formula, and they don't stray from that. There's no dirt on them. They literally handle business, and they're the best at what they do. And I think that's why, you know, that deal, you know, got made. And I mean, if you really think about it, Fox Television, you know, they're going to be on Fox. They're not on FX, you know, FS1. They're not on FX. They're not on any of those sub channels. They are literally on Fox, the big channel. That's just huge.
It's definitely huge and an enormous step for WWE in terms of what they're planning on doing with that deal that just happened. I mean, you spoke about it, George, about, you know, them sticking to a formula and also, you know, letting themselves be more known globally. With that being said, with the brand names like WWE, you mentioned NXT, and it just begged me the question, too. Not too long ago, Jeff and I were talking about, you know, Triple H, Paul Levesque's plan of, you know, building newer and more performance centers, not only in the United States, but across the globe. And it's also been a time that Jeff and I have mentioned how much we feel that independent wrestling, as much as people want to use that as a dirty word, indie, has really progressed a lot, and there's so much untapped talent there as well, yet to be discovered or yet to be used on other platforms, especially a platform like WWE. What are your thoughts on the fact that if there are other performance centers in other countries, is that tapping, you feel, the pool of talent out there, or will more indie performers, more talent, will be more prone to want to go to the performance center rather than other promotions where they might not be paid significantly what they want to get paid?
I think that goes based on what people's passions are. So there are definitely people who get into professional wrestling because they love professional wrestling and they love the, you know, the art of what it is. And then there are definitely people who get into professional wrestling because they believe that it's easy money. They believe that they're tough enough to, you know, put themselves through the pain and the trials and tribulations to get through, you know, the performance center to, you know, eventually, you know, debut on cards and work your way up. So I'm going to guess that is going to fall on the individual performance. I don't think, I mean, knowing people that are in the performance center every day, and I'm talking about people that have, you know, worked everywhere in the world, from the Tokyo Dome to, you know, 150 people, you know, at a local VFW. These people go in there with an open mind, and regardless of what they've already accomplished, and they are succeeding and excelling in that system. So I see that system work. It's just like the New Japan Dojo. The New Japan Dojo succeeds because they're teaching you the fundamentals of whatever, you know, brand it is. So I firmly believe there are going to be people who would excel if they went to the PC and didn't do the indies. I mean, it's proven. There are guys that didn't do Randy Orton. Look at that. I don't think he did any indies. I mean, you could sort of, you know, say that OVW at that point was an indie, but was it really? They were teaching him the WWE system. John Cena did indies, you know. But there are guys that, you know, don't need the system. They don't need the system to create their own brand, but they still have to adapt to that system. But to answer your question, I think it comes down to, you know, what type of athlete they are. Are they the type that just wants that fame and fortune that goes along with WWE, and you sort of see them burn out real quick and you can almost see them coming? Or are they're going to be the guys that go out on the indies, they make it, and then go into that system and start, you know, they're polished up, they get TV ready. You know, so again, I think it just comes down to that individual person.
We're talking to George Carroll, of course. A great insight here on just pro wrestling, and you can tell, man, he knows his stuff, and he's just a fan. You can tell the fan come out of him when he talks about this. He's so passionate. But let's talk about New Japan, and it started with the G1 special last year in Long Beach, and then we got Strong Style Evolved in March, and now New Japan is moving to a little bit of a larger venue at the Cow Palace. When you think of the Cow Palace in San Francisco, you think of history and historic wrestling matches there. Talk about what exactly is, you know, the plan for July. What exactly do they want to get out of that?
The plan in July is to that's all the Japanese office. That's on them what exactly their plans are. But I mean, if you would look big picture with what they would expect, you know, it's a historic venue. It's Roy Shire's promotion. You're looking at the Battle Royals and Ray Stevens and Pat Patterson and Pepper Gomez and all these, you know, huge stars that came from there. It's a chance to say, hey, there was a lot of hype. You know, they could have sold 10,000 tickets last July. They could have done it again when they came back for a Strong Style Evolved. You know, now's the chance. You know, can they do it? It's you know, an uphill battle because of, you know, the timing of when it is. But, I mean, when you got stars like Kenny Omega and Okada and Naito and Minoru Suzuki and Tanahashi, it's New Japan has that the difference, that the ability to take from that WWE pie, not necessarily take from it, but say, hey, we're here for that piece of pie. And I think shows like this, they're going to bring it. You know, they don't fail to deliver. You know, Dominion's coming up, and people are already, you know, talking, you know, Okada and Kenny Omega again. And like I said it before, that's going to end up being the Ricky Steamboat, Ric Flair of this generation. People are going to still be talking about that, you know, in 10 years, 20 years. You know, remember when they did 60 minutes, remember the Tokyo Dome, you know. So now they have a chance, you know, coming into this. Who knows what comes out of Dominion, who else is going to be part of, you know, that show. So I think it's a chance for them to do something very special.
Now, of course, Dominion is coming up, and
I'll
be honest with you. I was a novice to New Japan Pro Wrestling, and like we were talking about before, I think it's just the content and availability of New Japan that has made it much easier for us to watch. And when we heard about, you know, even, you know, news spread on the first matchup between Kenny Omega and Okada, and watching that matchup, then watching the second and the third, and now, you know, salivating for the fourth one. How important do you think up and coming stars like Kenny Omega, and for example, bringing in a Chris Jericho, is that helpful for the U.S. expansion? Does that let the U.S. audience, know some names, some notable names, and then that's why it, you know, it helps them, you know, when they come to the U.S. for something like the G1 special coming up in July?
Yeah, that's exactly what it does. Chris Jericho is, you know, I think he's proved himself to be bigger than pro wrestling, and he's one of those guys who has constantly evolved. Chris Jericho, if you look at him from the Thrill Seeker days to when he was Lionheart in ECW, he evolved again when he went to WCW. He evolved two or three more times in WCW. He's evolved 10 times since he started with WWE. Then he did Dancing with the Stars, and he started Fozzy, and he's had success with all that. And, he even had his own online show for a little bit. I think a guy like Chris Jericho is perfect for New Japan, A, because he's one of those, you know, generational talents that, you know, I think he's underappreciated for how intelligent he is. He does, and he's very smart in that he recognizes situations. He's created the freedom he has now because he's worked as hard as he has for WWE and for everything else he's had. So I think he is very smart. I think Rey Mysterio, another one who has worked very hard to create a broader brand, I think pickups like that raise the visibility, even if it's a short term. You know, and you think about it like this: if you brought on Chris Jericho and your New Japan World numbers are at 150,000, and Jericho brings you up to 200,000, and you know, you get the typical drop off, and you still keep out of the 50,000 new subscribers you get, you keep, 30,000 of them. That's still huge profit long after Chris Jericho's gone. So I think that is it's very smart. It's a genius. You know, Gedo, the whole New Japan, you know, Japanese office, Shinbayashi, they're all just forward thinking. You know, they're it's not about today, it's about tomorrow, it's about a year from now, it's about 2 years, 3 years. So it's very smart. You gotta sometimes wrestling fans just look at it in the boxes. You probably hear, some fans, I don't necessarily like Jericho versus Naito. I wanted Jericho versus Tanahashi, Jericho versus Okada. Well, who knows where that's going? That's the thing. A lot of fans, because of the accessibility they have to a product, on a minute-to-minute basis per day, they want everything now. But, New Japan's a different style than WWE. They're going to give you what you want. You just have to be patient, which I think builds up that anticipation. And they work hard to get there. So it's not like they're just like, oh, yeah, we're just going to give it to you, and then you're gone, because that's not how you maintain an audience.
No, it's very true. I mean, wrestling fans, and I can speak for them proudly, that we get very impatient. We want things to happen now, especially you, Jeff. You're the most impatient
guy I've ever
dealt
with. It's all instant gratification,
man. Yeah, exactly. But, with that being said, in terms of the popularity of New Japan and what it's doing now, especially when it's worked its way over here to the U.S. With all the specials, and now we're looking forward to Dominion, do you think a lot of the influence of why Japan's been here for a while? I mean, it's nothing new. For people who don't really know it, obviously general wrestling fans don't know that much about it. They're being first introduced to it. Do you think a lot of it has to do with the accessibility, like you mentioned before, of why it's making moves now in the U.S., which before it never really, from my perspective, never really tried to do that? Is it more the accessibility now with New Japan World, the streaming, and also having the ability to have the product being put on Access TV?
Yeah, I think, have either of you guys ever been to WrestleMania?
Oh, man, we could tell you, man, we've gone to like five in a row now. So yeah.
Okay, so when you stepped off the plane in New Orleans, you immediately got WWE, right? They were right there when you were, you know, it was everywhere.
Yeah.
I think that's the marketing, the tying themselves into towns and working with the actual cities and states. And, you know, I think that's a huge thing that WWE does that no other promotion, whether it was TNA when they were at their peak, WCW used to do it, if you remember back in the Attitude Era. If WWE got the cover of Entertainment Weekly, well, WCW got the covers of TV Guide magazine. I don't think any promotion has taken that next level marketing to actually raise their own visibility. I think what New Japan's doing effectively is they're working within a strict budget and slowly rolling out their expansion. I don't think they're overstepping. They're not going, okay, well, we're going to drop $1 million on advertising that may fail, but it may work, you know, right now to get it out there and make sure that people know, because New Japan has such a vast history. It goes all the way back to 1972. Mm-hmm. So you have to, it's like giving them appetizers. Okay, they just sat down, you know, it's just the first couple years of this. So now they're getting the appetizers, they're getting the appetite wet, and eventually it's going to roll out so that it will be, their main course is going to be here, and, you know, maybe, you know, a Wrestle Kingdom style show will be run in the U.S., but it's not time for that yet. You know, why take that chance and fail when you can build to something special like that? And they're constantly taking the temperature. I don't think anybody's taken advantage of marketing here. I don't think anybody's hired a big marketing firm. I think New Japan has, you know, they've done a great job of slowly, you know, integrating themselves into the wrestling world. But I don't know if WWF or WWE fans are as aware of New Japan Pro Wrestling as they can be. And, you know, because there are still people like, oh, what's New Japan? Tell me about it. And, you know, and it is what it is. They'll eventually get there. I don't think anybody's jumped that marketing like WWE does. When WWE's coming to town, you hear it. They're on the radio shows. They're, you know, there's ads everywhere. You know, there's, you know, bus stations that have posters on it. They're on the side of the buses. They're everywhere. You know, because that's, you know, they have the ability to do that. I don't think anybody else has that ability yet.
Well, that being said, you said you have to be very patient. Fans have to be patient. Do you think, can you see New Japan reaching those levels as well? Going to
the
a town.
WWE type levels? It goes back to that same TV thing. Unless you, WWE is a dragon, a fire-breathing dragon right now. And I don't think there's a white knight that can even come close to giving them a battle, which is why I don't think it's smart. You know, it's like, Before the Attitude Era, where it was WWE versus WCW, WCW wasn't a global product. They weren't a national product. They were more regional. I think New Japan has the ability, and I think, you know, Ring of Honor may be able to do it, you know, with the right team behind them. Somebody can claim some of that, but I don't think anybody's ever going to be able to do compete exactly. You won't see WCW competing with WWE, and it's full of gold now. I mean, if you think about it, you know, 4 million fans on a Monday night, nobody's really going to compete with WWE. There's, you know, TNA tried it, you know, and they had Hogan and Jeff Hardy and RVD and all these other guys, and it just didn't work. So why would you? And it just looked bad on them. So I wouldn't try and compete with that. I mean, if I was going to compete, I would maybe pick a different night, maybe pick, you know, Wednesday night. Let's try and pick on, you know, team, you know, NXT, which is the, you know, the baby brother of it, you know, try and bully them around and see what we could do there. But then you got to work. I mean, WWE is the bully in the yard. They can smack whoever they want around whenever they want. And it's just not that they're bullies or, you know, anything like that, but I'm just saying they have that ability. So there's why, you know, why try and compete with them? Just focus on what you do well, promote that, and just keep building your audience. Because you got to think about, you know, again, I go back to that Attitude Era. At that point, there was like 11 or 12 million fans watching on a Monday night. So WWE's numbers level at 4 million on a Monday, even with their, you know, DVR numbers, were, you know, however much higher they go, there's still, you know, 7, 8 million fans somewhere in this universe. Maybe, you know, 5 million of them were casuals, and, you know, the other fans were like, ah, you know what, I'm just, I outgrew wrestling. It's just, you know, I'm not a WWE fan. You can find those fans. They're out there. You just have to give them some a different flavor of WWE. You have to give them something that they can relate to and attach to and say, hey, oh, yeah, I remember. That's why I'm a fan of professional wrestling. And they'll fall back in love with it. You just have to be different.
I think that's a great point, George. I think that it's wrong to even think that you can compete with like the trendsetter says, the machine. I think it's you want to get a piece of the pie, and I don't think there's anything wrong with that, because I think you carve yourself a niche, and you know, you do it slow, progression.
But Jeff, I also think there's nothing wrong with trying to be that. Yeah. Not that you're competing with WWE, but I want to be in that same mind frame of ourselves as a company.
Yeah, no, I know, but I just think you go with the wrong mentality, thinking like, oh, we have to beat them, because I think then you try to do things, you know, too quick, and I think that's not, you know, not the right way to do it, right?
Yeah, I mean, look at what the Young Bucks did. You know, yeah. Young Bucks and Cody. I mean, 10,000 seats—that is unheard of. They sold 10,000 tickets. How did they do it? They slowly built their brand. You know, they are, you know, likely the hardest working, you know, Nick and Matt, and even Cody, he works, he's relentless. They all are. They built a brand over the, you know, the course of years, and they built trust within their fan base. They promised, and they've delivered so far, a different product than what WWE is presenting to people. And they showed you, you know, whether hopefully they can do this a million more times. But if they only do it once, they did something special. They drew 10,000 fans with no television, with just an online fan base that, you know, come out and support them, whether it's buying their T-shirts or, you know, just subscribing to their YouTube channel, whatever. That fan base came out in droves, and maybe there are more, you know, to their fan base than any of us can see, because they have links to Ring of Honor, you know, so it's some of that fan base and the New Japan fan base. But, you know, if you took a poll of their fans, I'd bet that the majority of their fans would say, if you placed it in order, where does your loyalty lie in this fan base? Are you a Young Bucks Cody fan? Are you an ROH fan, a New Japan fan? The majority of those people would check the Young Bucks Cody fan, because they've consistently delivered what those fans desired and pushed them to actually, you know, go out with, you know, sit online and sell out as fast as they did. And I text them, because I told them when we sold out the New Japan shows last July, I got emotional when I got that call from Ticketmaster telling me that the tickets were sold out, because we thought the system was broken. And I text them that, you know, I totally relate to what they felt, and it was really emotional for all of them, and it's something special. So, but that's, again, is another sign that there's enough fans out there. If you create that interesting product, give them something different, there's enough of a fan base to minimally sell out a 10,000-seat building. Can you imagine if the Young Bucks and Cody and Kenny had national television on a weekly basis, just focused on what they do, not, you know, not just credit to Ring of Honor or New Japan. But I mean, maybe it wouldn't be as special and they couldn't do it. But I think because they've built their brand up, that DIY, do-it-yourself brand, and I've seen them tirelessly sit through lines or stand through lines and give every fan FaceTime, hugs, you know, high fives, and really made them feel special. It's just incredible. So they're proof that you can, not necessarily, they're not trying to compete with WWE. That's a misconception. And they don't need to compete with WWE. But they can definitely, there the possibility of creating something special outside of WWE totally exists.
I mean, I'm blown away by the entrepreneurship now of some of these wrestlers now, and they and the business that they know that they're wrestlers, but they're also businessmen first. Where back in the 80s and maybe early 90s, they were like, you know, just making money off, you know, of just performing the event and stuff. But now really being an entrepreneur and you know, getting those t-shirt designs out and doing all those things and social media, which is a huge power for anybody now, social media too. So I'm very impressed by this generation's wrestler now, because I think they're a lot more about business. And one final one for me, Georgia. And again, thank you so much for the time you've given us here. But my question, my last question is, there seems to be like a now a transition in leadership kind of now in New Japan. Naoki Sugabayashi kind of giving the realms now, the I guess, transition in power.
Giving the reins to.
Yeah, exactly. To Harold Mee, a Dutch businessman, non-Japanese now. Do you think that's something that has a bright future to it?
Of course. I don't think they're very strategic in their moves. So I think everything with them is a chess, is a move on the chessboard. So it's not like Chairman Shigabayashi is, you know, going away. He has been instrumental in following the guidance of Kidani to get New Japan where it is, you know, the team that they have in place, the management team, you know, even names you've heard, I won't go into it because, you know, just out of professional courtesy. But yeah, I mean, it's definitely smart. You notice there's, you know, there's the UK Strong Style shows coming up. There's a lot going on, and it's, change can be scary, but they're so tactical with what they do that I wouldn't be as afraid, you know, based on knowing how they handle things and how smart they are with business. So, yeah, I think it's a great thing for business.
He is George Carroll, International Wrestling Executive. You can follow him on Twitter at G Carroll, 2 R's 2 L's 77, and he will have the George Carroll seminar this Saturday from 3 to 6 p.m. at Hoboken, New Jersey, 301 Garden Street, for Capital Wrestling. And it's only $30, guys. It's a steal. I mean, just to get, I feel like I should have
with
given
the wealth of knowledge that he has. $30 isn't anything.
So. Exactly. So I wanted to thank you for your time. Sorry about the Celtics, man. I'm really sorry about that.
That's Jeff. Jeff's really
no,
nice.
No.
And then
no.
He just rubs it in that way. Seriously.
George, I can't get into the NBA nowadays.
The Celtics totally made it a lot further based on heart, desire, and playing as a team than they had any right. They took the greatest player in the game today to 7 games, mm-hmm. and he was, you know, dragging his tongue on the floor at points. But he stepped up when he needed to, and, you know, the young guys choked. But the, you know, the Celtics, talk to me next year when Hayward and Kyrie are playing, and it's going to be, it's a total different NBA come next September.
It's like you guys have made off-season moves, and you guys really haven't had to spend any money. You know, you guys get Kyrie back now, hopefully, you know, that leg injury is behind him. And, of course, you're going to get a, hopefully, cross your fingers, a full season of Gordon Hayward, see what he's got. So you've made two off-season moves without really having to make trades or spend cash.
Exactly. Right. And we still have, you know, a boatload of draft picks coming up. So I think the Celtics are going to be okay. They're going to be a powerhouse for a long time.
And the Patriots are the Patriots. I don't know if you're a Pats fan, but, you know, they'll be in the Super Bowl. And they'll be in the Super Bowl again, too. And your Bruins are okay and all that stuff. So,
yeah.
Not to mention the Red Sox, too.
Who knows about the Red Sox?
The Red Sox.
You know, they're doing pretty good. They're still in first place. But, yeah, it's since, you know, 2001, it's been – before that, it was pretty tough because we couldn't win anything. But, you know, since 2001, we seem to be, you know, doing okay. We're winning championships.
Yeah, funny, how is it? I'm probably going to steal a quote from CM Punk, which we all know and love, right? Yeah, funny, Boston now is actually not the underdog anymore. They're like the dynasty.
Yeah.
Right, and it's funny. I was just talking to somebody today about how, you know, because I'm a Red Sox fan, but this person's a Yankees fan, and I said, well, now you can see why people hate Tom Brady, because he wins. Yeah. And just like growing up, I hated the Yankees because all they did was win.
Yeah.
Well, we win. We do a pretty good job of winning, and the Yankees haven't really won anything since, what, like 08?
Yeah.
Yeah, thanks for reminding me, George.
Pretty good.
Thanks for rubbing that one in. I guess that was Jeff that insulted you, not me. You're not throwing it back at me for some reason.
I'm just bitter because I'm a Nets fan. So like, I really don't have a basketball team to begin with. So
well,
I gotta,
that's pretty interesting.
Yeah, oh yeah, and you guys fleeced us for Kevin Garnett, Paul Pierce, and you know that was
we're still benefiting from that deal.
Yeah, you are.
Yes, they are.
Hey, but at least you got a nice, beautiful stadium there in Brooklyn.
That's yeah, cool. Yeah. Have you ever? Oh man, I mean,
yeah, it's cool for SummerSlam.
There for Takeover in August.
Oh, exactly. Right. That's all it's good for, basically. is it more, George, do you dislike the Yankee fan or the team itself, the organization?
No, I'm super competitive. Okay. So I just they're just the mortal enemy. They've always been the enemy growing up. I mean, you know, think about the Red Sox as a kid. I was born in 77. The closest we got was 86. And then we didn't do anything. And you know, Aaron Boone hitting the home run off of Wakefield in 2000.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
It was just crushed. And then, you know, oh no, it was 2003. And then 2004, you know what happened there, right?
Yeah. Yep.
Up 3-0. And then,
Kevin
Millar said, don't let us win one. And we won one, and then we won another. And then
Kevin Millar.
You guys were you guys were sent home, and then we went to St. Louis and won our first. World Series since 1918.
Let's be honest, that was the World Series for you guys, because after that, St. Louis was they were just the freaking victims of that World Series. Just innocent bystanders in that, because you know your World Series was that Yankee one. George, I would love to be there for the seminar, but next time you're in the Jersey area, I'd love to have you in studio, because just pick your brain, because we could have gone on here for 2 hours, but you know you got to do, you know, we know you have stuff to do. And how great is that you get to do what you love every single day, right? I mean, that's awesome too. So we'd love to have you in studio one day, man, and really pick your brain. Maybe. Yep. All right, George, thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Thanks, guys. Have a good one.
All right, Trendsetter, that was George Carroll, and that interview was brought to you by none other than Collar & Elbow. It is an apparel brand founded by Al Snow, mixing wrestling passion with street fashion. From cool-looking headwear with great-looking men's and women's shirts, check out their entire spring fashion line by going to collarxelbowbrand.com. Save yourself 10% on the entire online purchase just by entering promo code HIGHSPOTPODCAST, all in caps. You want to look good this summer, go to collarxelbowbrand.com. Thanks to George Carroll for joining us. You can follow him on Twitter at GCarroll77. That's two R's and two L's. Trendsetter, what do you make? What did you get out of this interview?
What I basically got out of it is the mere fact that when we talk about what we spoke about earlier, what we've spoken about previous episodes before in the past, Jeff, that the state of independent wrestling is alive and it's well. There's obviously a little differences in opinion in terms of where it can elevate itself in terms of competing with the likes of The Machine, WWE. But ultimately, I think it's at a stage where it's never been before. It's been revitalized, I feel, in my opinion. And George mentioned to it, too, in terms of marketing, from a marketing standpoint, with all the accessibility we have now in terms of distributing this type of content with social media and things of that nature, now with streaming being more active than ever before, and maybe, who knows, we didn't get a chance to ask them this, but maybe the model of the pay-per-view is kind of dying a little bit as well. We can ask them that another time when we have them on the show again. But definitely in terms of like, new things are happening, and I told you this, Jeff, towards the tail end of 2017, right? It's going to be, I felt more is going to be the evolution of wrestling. It's evolving into something that I never thought would ever happen, and he's definitely excited on board of what the what-ifs could happen for Ring of Honor, what the what-ifs could happen for a promotion like New Japan Wrestling. So future's exciting, man. I can't wait to see what the future holds for a promotion like, more exclusively, something I'm really excited for, New Japan Pro Wrestling.
Of course, Dominion is next week. It's headlined by Kenny Omega versus Okada 4.
Oh my God, can you believe that, Jeff?
I don't know, are you whining or are you just
happy?
Can
you believe that? Well,
I can't believe
you
that.
You can't tell. You can't tell. No.
I can't believe it though, Trendsetter. That is, looking forward to that. I don't care if I got to stay up all night.
I'm whining because it's so good.
I know, right? Could you ever whine for something being so good? Yes, it is
Okada. Got a little cheese for that wine? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It is Omega and Okada 4, and also the IWGP Intercontinental Championship is on the line. And again, I've been able to hold that title actually, and man, it is heavy, and it's going
it's more than 10 pounds of gold.
It's more than 10 pounds of gold. It's going to be Naito and Chris Jericho. Can't wait for that matchup. You know, I always look forward to seeing Chris Jericho, and this Jericho from New Japan is a mean look in Jericho. It is nothing like we've seen in WWE.
He's a mean man.
He's a mean man, Chris Jericho. And what is going to happen in that matchup? I'm pretty sure we will talk about that and preview that next week. So looking forward to so many things as well. You know, Trendsetter, the Jersey Wrecking Crew is all in. Don't forget, we will be all in Labor Day weekend in Chicago, Illinois. We'll be on Podcast Row. Going to have a live show for you there. More details ahead. But just remember that the Jersey Wrecking Crew, you guys are all in with us. So looking forward to that as well. And of course, you can listen to the High Spot Podcast on the Cheap Pops Podcast Network. It is Brian Fritz and Michael Wiseman's baby. They are the flagship show there with Between the Ropes, which downloads every Wednesday. So every Wednesday. Mm-hmm. And definitely you got shows like the Cosmic Geppetto, where you get the latest on pop culture and pro wrestling. Sports Guys Talk Wrestling, that is Stu Myers and Justin Simmons. They're two guys from Austin, Texas, just talking pro wrestling. Definitely listen to their show. They will also be all in. Stick to the Gimmick with Spencer Davies and Martin Harp, recapping everything that is NXT. You can also listen to us on the Shining Wizards and B Plus Player Radio Networks, the Kickin' Ass Podcast with Jesse and Andy, Shot of Wrestling, Outsider's Edge with Mark Adam Haggerty. Mark Adam Haggerty, we were graced by your presence those 2 days
in Richmond Park,
New Jersey. And again, you are one of the best, if not the best, ring announcers out there, best in the biz. So again, we love you, Mark Adam. Thank you for having us on the B-Plus Player Radio Network. Shining Wizards, we love you. Thank you so much for everything you do. And Trendsetter, man, what a week of wrestling. We've got Money in the Bank that we still have to talk about. Samoa Joe fills that final spot.
Yes, he does.
You know, next weekend, we'll preview Dominion. We'll get more into that Mauro Ranallo documentary, too, which we want to watch. You want to study it and talk about that too, because that's something that obviously has been the talk so far. So Mauro Ranallo, we'll talk about that documentary. We'll have amazing guests for you. So Trendsetter, our job is never done.
Our job is never done, so you guys have to wait another week for it to be heard by us here on the High Spot Podcast. Make sure you follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat. Make sure you like us on Facebook, all one word, at High Spot Podcast. You can also visit our website, highspotpodcast.com. Check out our YouTube channel as well. It's our Adventures with the Trendsetter that I post out. I promise you, all my AVN will be out before you know it.
Don't make promises you can't keep there, Trendsetter.
You're right.
Anyways, also, too, before we go, I just want to say one final thing, and that is that we will have now, starting next week, Tessa Blanchard press conference. They do a teleconference, Impact Wrestling does, and you can find that on highspotpodcast.com. So we're adding things to the website as well.
Madison Rain and now Tessa Blanchard.
Madison Rain last week, and now we can officially say that every week we will have the teleconference for you in its entirety or bits and pieces of that interview with that guest at the time. And this week is Tessa Blanchard. So from Battle Club Pro, May the Queen Reign, to now a teleconference with the media, you will hear from Tessa Blanchard on our website. Just go to highspotpodcast.com for that.
And so for the Jersey Wrecking Crew, for my tag team partner, the one and only Jeff Martin, I am the Trendsetter Brian Berger. Thank you guys so much for listening to this week's episode. And just remember, guys, as you finish listening to this episode, always know and never forget or ever question the fact that we do this for one reason and one reason only. We do this for you, the crew.
Question number 91 for the Army.
Ah, so you can't do a pull-up. Welcome to the club, mate. I can do squats for days, but just couldn't crack a pull-up. But no one's the full package when they arrive. So you all muck in. Your mates take you out for some extra training. Got my first pull-up in a week. They're absolute legends.
The Army is recruiting now. To have your questions answered and find where you belong, search Army Jobs.